We're going to start right over here. Parshvas Chanan, everybody. Parshvas Chanan, and we have Perek Dalet Pasuk Yates. It says, Pen Tisa Inecha Shamaimo. Maybe, this is part of the whole soliloquy of Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe you'll lift up your eyes to the heavens. You're going to see the sun, the moon, the stars, Kol Tzva Shamaim, all the hosts of the heavens, all of the angels of Nidachta. And you'll be led astray by it. You'll bow down to them, Vavaratam, and you'll serve them. These are the things that God gave over to the other nations, that they should have among all the things under the heavens itself. So there's a lot of stuff in this pasuk. Rashi says the issue became that the people started looking up toward the heavens for help, and they made a mistake. What was the mistake? They looked up and thought the sun, the moon, the stars, really referring to the constellations, their positioning, and things like that, were proper intermediaries to be able to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things. That instead of asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, they started going through these sun, moon, stars, these types of things, and eventually people started worshiping them as gods, as idols. That's what ended up happening, says Rashi. Now, Rabbi Bachaya says there's a difference between the word Shamayim and Hashamayimah, the way that the word is written. Similar to the difference between Mitzrayim and Mitzrayimah. Shamayim means all the parts of the heavens, more like a general idea. The heavens as a general concept, everything there. Hashamayimah means specific parts of the heavens. Maybe you're going to look up to Shamayim, you'll see the whole heavens, then you'll think there's actually a God. But if you look at Hashamayimah, certain aspects of the heavens, you look at something like a black hole, or you look at something like a tremendous planet, or something that's powerful out there, and you might say to yourself, maybe you'll be swayed to think maybe that's a bit more than anything else. Maybe that's something that's really powerful. It's not literally something that you saw, but really something that you're understanding. My understanding of how this works might be something that's a little bit more. Maybe you're going to look at all those things up in the heavens, the way that our scientists do today, see the things that are going on in galaxies that are far, far, far away, and they're going to say to themselves, wow, there must be something to these powers. It's not just a god, there's something to it over there. That's what the Rabbi Bachaya says. Question is, says the Elos HaShachar, Rav Steinman, are you allowed to look up to the heavens? Are you allowed to look up to the heavens and start asking questions and start doing stuff like that? Maybe it should be usher. Maybe you can't look through a telescope, the Hubble telescope, and see the galaxies and how they look, etc. Maybe that should be usher. Why? Because if you look up there, pentisa inakha shamaimo, the ra'isa, and you see these things, you're going to bow down to them. Maybe the pasuk is telling you that it's usher to go to the planetarium. I honestly, the amount of boredom that I get from going to the planetarium, this would be the easiest issue in the world for me. Right? I mean, the only thing the planetarium is good for is falling asleep among the stars when they show those stars up ahead. That is a tremendous thing. Without a question. There is a type for Avodah Zarah, but the pusik is weird in that sense. So maybe even then, is it usher back then to look up at the heavens and to be able to look at it? So the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos Lo Saseh number 10 says you are allowed to look up. You're allowed to look up, but you cannot consider them to be anything more than God's servants. That's what you got to do. Pentisa inecha shemaima, don't look up and think that these are gods. Don't look up and think that these are idols. Look up and see them and understand that there's a God in charge of them. That's how the Rambam looks at over here, and that's not us. Parties also brings a medrash agadol. This is a crazy medrash. After Moshe Rabbeinu died, it was the first time they had ever seen the sun, moon, and stars. They had not seen the sun, moon, and stars yet. The first time they saw it was when Moshe Rabbeinu died. Now why? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu died, the Anani HaKavod went away. The clouds of glory. According to the Rabbeinu Hanano, quoted by the Rabbeinu Bechaya in Shmos Yud Beis Beis, when they're talking about the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, the Rabbeinu Hanano holds that the clouds blocked out the sun and the moon and the stars. They couldn't see the sun, they couldn't see the moon, they couldn't see the stars. Kiddush Levana, the whole time up until that point, had been done only by Cheshbon. When they were Mekadesh the Chodesh, I shouldn't say Kiddush Levana, Mekadesh the Chodesh, every single month it happened through Cheshbon, because they couldn't see the sun and the moon and the stars throughout the time right over there. That's the concept that Anani HaKavod blocked them out. This, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, would be the first time that the sun and the moon and the stars were going to be able to be seen. Moshe, I know you have a question. Don't worry, give me a second. I might be able to answer it. Okay, so this is the idea that's right over there. Therefore, since it was going to be the first time they were going to see the sun, moon, and the stars, Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, maybe, just maybe, you're going to look up to the heavens for the very first time, you're going to look up at the sky, you're going to see that sun, moon, and stars, you're going to be so impressed by it, you're going to say, there is no God, these are our gods. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid of. He's afraid of what might happen because of this sun, moon, and stars. It's strange. Because are you really going to tell me they didn't see the sun, moon, and stars the entire time during the 40 years of the desert? Let me give you one question. When Aaron died, Does anybody remember what happened? When Aaron passed away, what happened? The clouds went away, and Canaan, or Sihon, or Amalek came and fought. Isn't that obvious? That's exactly what happened. I mean, we're not talking about something this is something that's brought down straight out from the Chumash. As soon as Aaron passed away, the Anani HaKavod went away. The Anani HaKavod were gone. You're telling me that the first time they saw the sun, moon, and the stars was a Moshe Rabbeinu died? No, they saw the sun, moon, and the stars when Aaron passed away, and Moshe Rabbeinu brought them back. So that's the first question you have to ask. So maybe Aaron passed away on a cloudy day. And maybe they weren't able to see that. Does anybody know, by the way, when Aaron passed away? Rosh Chodesh Av, very good. Rosh Chodesh Av. Rosh Chodesh Av is in the middle of the summer in Eretz Yisrael, right? And they were near Eretz Yisrael at the time. There should have been no clouds. There are barely any clouds in the sky during the times of Tammuz and Av in Eretz Yisrael. Anybody who's been there, it's hot as blazes, right? And there aren't very many clouds in the sky. But maybe there were clouds in the sky and they didn't see it. But nonetheless, I still have a problem. Anybody remember the Medrash, what happened in the 40th year on Tu B'Av? We're coming up to Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av is coming up soon. Right? What, Monday, I think? So Tu B'Av is coming up soon, right after Tishah. So what happened on Tu B'Av? What happened? Why is it such a chag? One of the six reasons brought down to the Gemara Basra, Baba Basra, is because the people went down to die. The Meraglim were supposed to die. Those people were 20 years old at the 40th year of the desert. They went into the grave. They realized they didn't die. So they got up the next morning. They thought maybe they messed up the date. They went down again. Then they went down again. Then they went down again. Then they saw the full moon in the sky on the 15th of the month, and they realized they weren't going to die. So they made that day into a chag. But I thought you just said that they never saw the moon. This is Rosh Chodesh Shvat. That was all the way on Tu B'Av. So how does that work? I don't understand. Were you able to see the moon or were you not able to see the moon? Well, which one was it over here? Aside from that, in Bamidbor, Chaf Hei, it says they took the Rosh Ha'am by those people of Midian and they hung them by the sun. But if there is no sun, there's a lot of kashas over here. If you're going to tell me through a medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Bnei Yisrael, the first time you're going to see the sun, moon, and the stars when the Anani HaKavod go away, I've got kashas on that. Nonetheless, that is a medrash agada. It is brought down the way. Moshe, did that answer your question? Man, what's your question? Well, you still had something at night. You're right. In other words, the cloud that led them in front, Lanchosam Baderech, was there during the day, and then an Amud Eish at night. So you did have that, right? But the Anan HaKavod surrounding them, always surrounding them to protect them from snakes, to protect them from arrows, to protect them from all the things on the side. So you are right. The cloud in front, the seventh cloud, was only there during the day, and the Eish was at night. But the other six clouds should have been there the entire time. The strange part of the pasuk is something even different. Asher cholak lahem. It says that God gave the sun, the moon, and the stars over to the other nations of the world. So what does that mean? What does that get? God gives them over, the planets and the stars was given over to the other nation? So in fact, this is a Gemara. If anybody's done Megillah, in Megillah Tesamud Beis, when Ptolemy asked for the Torah to be translated by the 72 Zakenim, which we now call the Septuagint or the King James Bible, the way that they translated, we know there were certain psukim that they purposely changed. Remember, there were 72 Zakenim in 72 different rooms, and they came up with the same chap. Each one of the changes that they made was made the same by every single one of the 72 Chachamim, which was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But that Septuagint included this pasuk. And here they said, instead of the following, it says, all of these stars that God gave them to the nations, they all added on the word lahayir, to light up for them. The purpose of the sun and the moon and the stars was to light up, not as gods, as it sounds like, but rather to light up for them. That the sun and moon and the stars was there for them to have light. So why would the pasuk word it this way? Why would it word it in such a strange way that he gave the luminaries to the nations as if to say that they're their gods, they are their gods, when you could just have easily said it in such a simple fashion? You have to add on a word, so why would the pasuk say it that way? There's a Torah Tosefis Brach over here, Rebar Chapshtin, that says that it's not a big chap, it's not a big kasha. There are other words in the Torah that we don't get, we just don't get the language anymore. The language is not the same as what it was. So don't ask any questions on something like that. But still, you gave, let's say it means lahayir. Was the sun and the moon and the stars only given to the nations? Does anybody here use the sun? We all use the sun. The sun and the moon and stars was given to the Jews as well as to the nations. How can you say that the sun and the moon and stars was only given to the nations? What's the obvious answer, the Guraya says? Such a pashut answer. The answer is, if not for the other nations of the world, and listen to this chap, if not for the other nations, if they wouldn't exist, there would be no sun, moon, and stars. We would have a world without a sun, without the moon, and without stars. For Bnei Yisrael, We would have had some other form of light. You want to call that the Oraganas? Call the Oraganas. You want to call it the light that helped the plants grow on Tuesday of the first 6 days of creation, before Wednesday the sun and the moon and the stars were created? If there were plants on day three, then obviously photosynthesis, there has to be some type of light. But the sun and the moon and the stars weren't created until day four. So how were there things on day three? There was a light without the sun, moon, and the stars. What would the Jews have had? What would he have had? With the nations, we have the sun, moon, and stars. L'hayir, to light up. For us, we don't need it for that. We have other ways of getting light.
Why couldn't
the other
nations use the
light? The other light? Yeah. They didn't deserve it. Weren't worthy, we'll call it. Why we were worthy, even when we sin, is a good kasha. But they weren't worthy of being able to have it. That's the Gurari's answer, the Maharal's answer to that kasha. But Rashi says in his Davar Acher, and this takes us to our point, to our real point here. The Rashbam says as well, this is Rashi's Davar Acher and the Rashbam. They say, based on the Gemara, Avodah Zarah, Nun Hei Amid Aleph, this was exactly what the Pasuk means. The luminaries, the sun, the moon, the constellations in the sky, were to be the other nations' gods. They're actual gods. Asher cholak lahem, asher cholak osam lakol ha'amim. It was given over to them, mamish, for them to be able to do anything. Not that these sun, moon, and stars actually do anything. Not like that. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu will not take them away from their beliefs. If the nations of the world want to believe that the sun is their god, God allows them to believe that way. We, on the other hand, we are not allowed to think that way. We are taken care of by a Kadosh Baruch Hu alone, nothing else, and we cannot think that way. But they, Hashem doesn't stop them from thinking that the sun and the moon and the stars are their gods. Hashem allows them to think that way. Now, what does this mean? Gemara in Avodah Zarah Nunhei says, Rava Bar Yitzchak asks, how is it that certain idol worshippers get these dreams? And I'm telling you, this is going to take us to a long, I'm not going to go into it as much as you could, but you can add on whatever you want to this. Rava Bar Yitzchak asked, how can it be that idol worshippers are given dreams, and in their dreams, they see if you sacrifice this human being, if you do this, then the rain will fall. They wake up, they sacrifice that human being, and the rain falls. Says Rabbi Yitzchak, how is that so? What I'm really saying is, there are people out there with their forms of tumah, whatever it is, that can predict the future. Whether you want to call that, you know, like the, I don't know, about the palm readers or whatever it is. How do these occultists have these powers? How does God allow it to happen? Why would Ovdei Avodah Zarah be able to heal the sick? Why is it that there have been priests in the past? If Christianity is not true, so if that's not true, then why is it that it works? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah answers this question. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows it to happen to fool the worshippers of that Avodah Zarah into thinking there's something mamish to their service when it's really a bunch of garbage. It's the same way by us. We have the concept of a Navi Sheker. I'm not going to go into the whole concept now, but mamish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a person to not get a prophecy, but to be fooled by his own prophecy, and he goes up to the Jews, and we as Jews have to know he's an Avi Sheker. But he's speaking out words that seem to come from God. He seems to have a nevuah. We have to understand what a nevuah Sheker is, and say that guy's an Avi Sheker. A Tzidkiyah ben Kenana is a false prophet, and a Michoihu is a real prophet. You're supposed to do that. Achav couldn't tell the difference, so Achav messed up. We're required to tell the difference. It's a test. It's mamish and nisayon. And the nisayon for the non-Jews is exactly on this. They're going to see things that seem real. They're going to see the sun, the moon, and the stars act as their gods, lowercase g. And they're actually going to believe in it, and it's going to work for them. It's going to work. Hashem's not going to stop it. It's a crazy line. Torah Tumimah says, that shows, there are certain things left in this world, even though they're damaging, they're left in the world to be tested to us. It could be that we're not going to pass it. Could be. But they're there for us to do. Habali Tame, you want to become Tame? Poskano. We're going to open up the door for you. I'm not going to be Messianoso. I'm not going to help you through, says God. But if you want to open up the door to Tuma, I'm not going to stop you. A person that wants to believe in shtus and garbage, I can't do anything for you. There's nothing I can do. I had the most unreal conversation with a guy. Well, I went up to a guy, asked him, give me 1 second, Moshe, I'll get you in a second, but one of the most unbelievable conversations I think I've ever had, where I went up and I said to this guy, I'm like, what's going on? You went to Eretz Yisrael, you seemed to do really well, but now you came back to America, everything's off. He's like, yeah, I know. This is more fun. That was it. There's nothing you can argue with that. What's the argument? What is the argument for that? Yeah, Walter.
Why is the rain that happens after the dream, why is that attributed necessarily to the Avodah
You're right. It just seems like it, because right after the human, right after the human sacrifice, it rained. So it seemed like it came because of what they did, as a result of what they did. Of course, me and you will look at it and say, maybe not. Maybe it isn't. But that was Rav Bar Yitzchak's question. He looked at it and he said, I don't know. It seems like what they're doing is for real. We have to look at it like maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing them to think that it's real. Maybe it's just a pure coincidence. Maybe there is a coincidence behind that. We don't know, but that's the concept. Balatame, poskalo. We're going to give you the ability to make that mistake. The Marsha says this as well in that Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And not only that, says the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says they mamish are under the power of the luminaries. Their power of the luminaries, of the stars, of the constellations, of, so to speak, their mazel is stronger than them. And we spoke about this before, the concept of mazel for Yisrael. They are under the influence of those things. We, on the other hand, are above our mazel. We fight that mazel. We have the ability to say, they're not, they're under our power. Yoshua is able to stand the sun up in the sky. Moshe Rabbeinu is able to make the sun stand up. Nachdim Ben-Gurion is able to make the sun stand up in the sky. That's the famous Tana. Nachdim Ben-Gurion, one of the three rich people in Yerushalayim, you might have read about in Gittin Nun Vav Amud Aleph in the Gemara about the Chorban. That's Nachdim Ben-Gurion. They're under the power. We can't do anything. We can't do anything, right? But we can daven. And we can be above all those things. And they are totally underneath. So now, you might wonder how somebody can make this silly mistake. I'll just tell you, there is a Netziv. I don't fully understand or appreciate what the Netziv is saying. He says, we're not talking about the sun here. We're talking about the constellation of the sun. I don't know what he's referring to. I'm off a little bit in something. He said, go back to Bereshis Aleph Aleph. You'll understand what I mean. I went back to Bereshis Aleph Aleph. I'd done it before. I have no idea what he's referring to. There's something that he's referring to as the mazel. Then he said, go to the Parish of Mishnayis of the Rambam in Avodah Zarah Paragimel Mishnah Aleph, that when the sun is at a certain height in the sky, it connects with one of the constellations above, one of the Galgalim above, and it makes something happen. Again, I don't know. But he's trying to say that the worship of the sun is not worshiping the sun, it's worshiping the power of the constellation that the sun is connected with. I don't know what that means. But that's how the Netziv puts it, to make it a little bit easier. But of course, says the Tam Vadas, is Rav Schrumbach. He says, of course, if someone really wanted to, you could look up to the heavens and see God's hand behind all of it. You could see, this is amazing. If you do go to the planetarium and you aren't bored to death and you live through the first couple minutes of it, then you'll look at these things and you'll say, "What? This is crazy what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to do. That we're this tiny, tiny little speck. They have one thing in the planetarium here that didn't bore me to pieces, that had this tiny little thing where you go from a quark, a tiny little part of an atom, all the way up to like the whole universe and seeing as much as the universe as you possibly can and going up and up and up and up and seeing like how it goes from one to the other. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing where you're going down to the fondelet that are in the very, very bottom of your atoms, etc., all the way up to the entire universe. It's crazy. The entire craziness. Says Tam Vadas, of course, you can see it. You just got to make a decision beforehand. Are you looking for the right thing or are you looking for the wrong thing? Yes, what's on there? Why do we dance around praying to the moon? Right. Kiddush Levana, it's great. It's absolutely great, isn't it? I always thought to myself, I'd love to know what a non-Jewish person is thinking when we're out there dancing around. Like we do, when we do Kiddush Levana here, so Dairy Star is right next door, right? So we do Kiddush Levana in the back. We're saying like, I always look at the Dairy Star people like, what is going on there? We're just doing a random moon dance, right? Out there. It is the greatest moon dance of all time. Everybody holding hands with one another, right? In a big circle, like a little shtickle Havanagila stuff going on. And then all of a sudden, we're like going up to the moon. We're like, you the man, moon. It is amazing. Way too much for us to be able to talk about right now. The simple pshat is that Klal Yisrael is like the moon in that we wax and wane and we specifically go up to the moon and we see when it's waxing, when it's getting bigger in the sky at the beginning of the month as opposed to the end of the month when it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. When it's getting bigger, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just like the moon is waxing, we want Klal Yisrael to be waxing, to get up to the full moon status and stay there. That's what we wish. This is the concept, by the way, of the sun and the moon arguing with each other in Maisa Bereishis. We all know what I'm talking about. And the moon was minimized, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was memayit the moon and turned it small, and the sun was made big. This is what it means, that this moon keeps waning because we lost the power. It's all a medrash referring to Klal Yisrael and the nations. That's all what the reference is. It's an unbelievable little line. Chiddush Urim explained. What did Avraham Avinu do, guys? What was the first thing that Avraham Avinu looked at and saw that he thought was a god in the sky? He looked at the sun. And he said, that sun is the god. That's what he thought when he was a young kid. Then he saw the sun set, and he saw the moon rise. And he said, the moon is the god. Then he saw the sun rise again. He said, neither one of them are gods. Neither one of them are gods. It can't be. A god wouldn't allow someone else to take his place. So it can't be. There's got to be someone behind it. Behind it. So this is a great Chiddush HaRim. Chiddush HaRim says, if the sun was constantly in the sky and would not move, it would stay where it is. Meaning, if the earth would not rotate, the sun would stand up in the middle of the sky and it would be where it is at all times. At all times. I know it's impossible because what's going to be with the other side of the earth? The other side of the earth will be totally dead and dark because there's no sun going at it. But let's say that would be, if that would be over there, people would think it was a god. It would be unfair, so to speak, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu to be able to do it. Instead, it's one of the Ma'oros. It works in tandem together with all the other lights in the sky, the sun, the moon, the stars, etc. We can look at the sky and discern and figure out what is being done from all these types of things. We see that there's a light and then there's power. And there's a very big difference between the two. And it's totally the difference between how we're looking at it versus how the nations are looking at it. I wondered, according to this Chiddush HaRim, by the way, but what about in the North Pole, where for 6 months out of the year, the sun is up in the sky and doesn't move? But I don't think it's that big of a kasha. If you live in the North Pole, the sun might be up the whole time, but you ain't feeling it. I think it's obvious. The sun has no power. He's sitting up here, but he's not able to do anything. It seems to me that it would be a little bit different. The Alshech has a whole shot over here, but I'm going to skip out on that itself. Let's go on. The Torah's Moshe has an idea. He tries to connect both of them, that seemingly, that the fact that there are so many fools in the world, that Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to destroy the sun because there are people worshiping it. He allows the people to think of what it is because he knows that the sun is necessary for their well-being. Doesn't get rid of it for him. Now, let's skip over to the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim says, we all know that when Mashiach comes, the whole world will recognize God as king, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. The Pasuk in Tzfanya, Perek Gimel Pasuk Tes says, Ki az efoch ala amim safa brua, I will give to the nations a clear lip. Likro kulam b'shem Hashem, they'll all call out in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, le'ovdo, to serve him, shchem echad, with one shoulder, so to speak, one way, going straight toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, how's it going to be that way, says the Chafetz Chaim? Simple question. How's it going to be? All these nations that don't believe in Hashem, all of a sudden are going to turn around like that? They're going to be like, we're in now. What, you mean all the people that are Hindus in India are going to get up after worshiping Vishnu and Shabadu and all their guys, right? They're going to get up one day and they're going to just say, yeah, we're done. God, Hashem. That's it? Well, all the Christians are done? All the Muslims are done? The Muslims are willing to kill themselves for their beliefs. All of a sudden, they're going to see. How could that be? He just said, it's a simple question. What's Mashiach going to do? How is he going to do that? How is he going to happen? How's it going to happen? This is what he says. So the Chafetz Chaim asks that question. He says, it's simple. It says, Hasher cholak osam, hachlikan bidvarim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu fools the nations now into them thinking. We think to ourselves, there are times where honestly, I'm just confused. I don't get how other people aren't seeing this. I just don't get it. I see that the history of our nation, and how the major religions all come from us. And I look at this and I'm just like, how do other people not see this? How do other people not see this? How are other people fooled by the other things that are going on out there? How does a major religion base themselves on something that sounds to me to be ridiculous? How could it possibly be? All of these things just don't make any sense to me at all. In this line we say, Hechlikan Bidvarim. You're right, they fooled themselves into thinking they were right. When Mashiach comes, all he's going to do is remove that Asher Cholak Osam. He's going to remove the blinders, so to speak, from the horses. He's going to now let them see with a clear mind. He's going to clear their mind. And all of a sudden, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I can't believe it. It's not like right now they're adamant that God doesn't exist or that God is this or God is that. It's that right now they're being fooled. So take away the foolishness and they're fine. They'll understand it immediately. They're going to look at it and they're going to say, well, of course, it's going to be right there in front of our eyes. I can't believe we didn't see this. In a way, it's similar to Gan Eden and Gehenna. Gan Eden and Gehenna are on this world. They're here. But you ask me, where is it? Where is Gan Eden? Where is Gehenna? I don't know. We're given clear instructions. The four rivers that lead out of Gan Eden should be clear instructions to where they are. But it's a problem because we don't know exactly where those rivers are. We don't know exactly where they're going. Maybe things have switched. Maybe that was only in Pangaea. Who knows? Who knows what's going on with those things? But there are seemingly clear instructions. Yet somehow we're not able to see it. Moshe Rabbeinu's kever, we're told where it is. We're told it's opposite Baal Peor, it's a certain mountain. And the Gemara in Sotah Yud Gimel says, no one knows where Moshe Rabbeinu's kever is. Lo yada ish es kvuraso. Nobody knows it anywhere where Moshe Rabbeinu's kever is. But we're told where it is. there are certain things that we just can't see. At some point, someone in Eretz Yisrael is going to look in his backyard when Mashiach comes, and Gan Eden is going to be right there. He's going to be like, oh, man, I should sell this house now. Like, that's the perfect time, because he's a Jew, so he's always thinking of real estate. So there's something right there that's already going to hit. This is going to be by all the nations of the world. The Chafetz Chaim gives a mashal. A bunch of people are running through a forest, or walking through a forest. All of a sudden, it gets dark. They don't know what to do. It's pitch black in the forest. They don't know what to do. They start going around. They know they're somewhere near a city, but they don't know where to go. They start going around. They start tripping on rocks. And now they're worried. What if we go into a pit? What if there's wild animals? What if there's robbers over here? What are we going to do? So they sit down and they spend the whole night with a guard, a watchman, even though they can't see anything. They have their backs up against each other. They can't really sleep the whole night. They're worried about everything. In the morning, they wake up. They look through a bush. The street in the city is on the other side of the bush. The whole time it was right there. It was sitting there, right there the entire time. They just didn't realize it because they were in a state of confusion. They had no idea where they were. They had no idea what was going on. Says the Chofetz Chaim, this is the nations of the world, and what's going to happen, Lo Asid Lavo, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to part his way through that bush. He's going to open up the bush and let them see through. They're going to see it. They're going to be like, I can't believe it. It was here the entire time. I can't believe it didn't do it. That's how it's going to happen. Then comes the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says that every nation has their own malach and mazel. They have their own malach in charge and their own mazel, a star of their own, a constellation that leads them, so to speak. And this is true by every city as well. Bnei Yisrael have their own malach. They're not like them. We don't have a malach. We don't have a mazel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our malach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our mazel. That's the concept. What does the malach do? The Rabbeinu Ephraim says he's melitz for them. He argues their case in court in Beis Din Shomayla and helps them out when he needs. That's the Malach, says the Rabbeinu Ephraim. And that's what the Ibn Ezra is saying. Each one has it. The Ramban says the exact same thing, and it's a proof from Daniel. Daniel saw the Malachim of all the nations. He sees the Malach of each nation saying they're taking care of their needs. There's a Malach taking care of the needs of every nation up there. We don't need that. They need it. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says there's a real machlokas here between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban on one side and the Rambam on the other. In these pshatim, where the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban are saying that it's a malach, an actual malach that's in charge of the nation, and Rashi, who's not saying it's a malach, it's that asher cholakosam, it's something to fool them, but he doesn't say that it's a malach that's in charge of them. So that's the difference. What's the difference? It's machlokas, Rambam, and Ramban. The Rambam says that Avodah Zarah has nothing to it at all. There is no power to Avodah Zarah at all. Davening to an idol in any way, shape, or form is usur, absolutely, and it's like davening to a wall. It doesn't help. It doesn't do anything for you. There is nothing to it. It's a total waste of time. That is the Rambam Lishitaso. You probably know the Mishnah, Parish of Mishnais, the Rambam in Avodah Zarah, what he says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, what he says in Mori Nevuchim, what he goes on in Sefer HaMitzvos. Avodah Zarah is garnished, according to the Rambam. There's nothing there. There's literally nothing there. But the Ramban holds a little bit differently. Ramban says this in three different places. The Ramban holds HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows every nation to have a malach that's sholeit on it, that rules over that nation, and the malach does have some type of power, as long as that power isn't used to affect Klal Yisrael. Yaakov Kamenetsky says, the Ramban holds that a malach has the power of the nation. There is that power over there. Nonetheless, the nations are warned, do not daven to your malach. You can't daven to your malach directly. If you daven to the malach directly and you think he's in charge, he's not. There's a God in charge. You have to ask him. But what they can do, says the Ramban, and how Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is translating this Ramban, is they can ask the Malach to present their arguments to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the Malach is a Melitz Yosher, the way we ask, so to speak, the dead to be our Melitz Yosher in Shemayim, if the Malach is their Melitz Yosher, they have Malachim that are in charge of their nation, somebody that's an intermediary between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they can't daven to that Malach, but they can ask the Malach to present their arguments before the Beis Din Shomayla, that they would be able to do such a thing. They're davening to Hashem, but serving, so to speak, the Malach that's there for them. Perhaps there's a proof to this. Yiftach is talking to the nation of Ammon. When Ammon wants to fight Klal Yisrael, Yiftach sends a message to Ammon. I would assume it's around Perek Yud or Yud Aleph in Shoftim. If anybody's a girl, you can correct me on that one. But until then, but it's right around there. And he sends a message. He goes over to the Malach, to the what's it called? The people of Ammon. And he says, that which Kamosh, your God, has given you, that you should take. And that which Hashem has given us, that's what we should take. It sounds like, unless he was being sarcastic, that Chemosh gave them that land. Your God, your Malach, whatever your Koach, your Melitz in Shemayim is, he gave you what you're supposed to have, and that's that. And whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, that's what we get. So according to this Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the way that he's understanding this Ramban, there is a power to their Malach. Their Malach does have a power, you just can't daven to it. But you can ask it to be your Melitz Yosher. You should take what it is. But the Rambam says like the Ralbag. That case over there, he was joking. He's being sarcastic. He's saying, well, whatever Chemosh gave to you, whatever Chemosh is garbage, right? But whatever, you take whatever you have, and that's that. The Rambam says, not only is that, if you do like the Ramban, and you know, not that you daven, but you ask the Malach to help you, says the Rambam, doesn't help, and you're still over on Avodah Zarah. A non-Jew, according to the Rambam, would be Chayav Misa for doing that. But according to the Ramban, that's what he's supposed to do. He has his Malach helping him out. He has a mouth. This is Mamish Machlokas, and that's exactly what they're arguing about over here. The Ramban is saying, and the Ibn Ezra is saying, there is a mouth, there's a Koach, and they deal with that. That's their actual Malach. But the Rambam's looking at it and saying, absolutely not. There's no such thing. There's no such thing. It's a foolish thing, something to fool them with, but it's not real. There's nothing real to it. And that's a major Machlokas. Maybe, and I know I'm now adjusting this, there are a lot of issues with the Piyutim that we say during Slichos, if Malachay Elyon, the Machnisei Rachamim that we add on the end of Slichos, that we're coming up to in Eloch soon. And if you're Sephardi, it's very soon. Right? Machnisei Rachamim, Meshorzei, you deserve it. You deserve it. You know, those 9 days, that was a killer for us. So either way, but the Meshorzei Elyon, etc., all those things, maybe this is the difference. To ask them to deliver our prayers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe that's an extension that maybe we can make. Maybe. But the Rambam would say that's Usher Gummer. Still, I'm not so sure, because even according to the Ramban, this was the other nations who were allowed to do it. Who says that the Jews are allowed to ask Malachim to be able to present our prayers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Who says Jews are allowed to do that? Can you say Machnis Rachim? Can you say Meshorzei Elyon Piyutim? The Minigin Klal Yisrael is to say them. There are briskers that don't. There are people that don't. But it seems that we add them on. I'm even going to, I don't know if it's a pure proof. There's a Gemara by Kalev, and maybe it's a little bit different because it's a person, not a Malach. Kalev goes to the Maris, we all know, Kalev went away from the Meraglim, and he went to Maris Machpelah. According to the Gemara, he said, right, at the Kever, he davened to the Avos, he spalel el Avos, to save him from the eights of the Meraglim. He davened to the Avos. Doesn't say he davened to a Kaddish Baruch Hu at the Kever of the Avos. He davened to the Avos, is the wording in the Gemara. I think it's Lamed Beis and Beis and Sota. Lamed Beis, Lamed Gimel, whatever, right around there. It's strange. It's strange. Maybe that's different because it's the Avos and it's not a Malach. It's still, it's strange. It's very, very strange. There's a Ksava Kabbalah over here that I'm not going to go through right now. It's amazing, but I'll say out certain things. There is a concept called Shituf. Shituf is usur for a Jew without a question. Shituf is, I believe in God, but I believe God has a partner. So I can pray to him, God, or I could pray to the partner as well. Without a question that is usur, that's avodah zarah mamish for a Jew. If a Jew believes in that, I believe in the God and his son, right? Not S-U-N, but S-O-N, right? Not a capital S either, lowercase s, right? If you say that, right, that's avodah zarah mamish. That's how they say that without a question. What about by non-Jews? Is shituf usur by non-Jews? Can a non-Jew do shituf? Meaning, can he believe there is a God, but there's another God that goes with him? Can Christians be considered something without a problem of avodah zarah? Is that possible? I'm sorry? So it's all one entity together, but they are davening to separate entities, which they call the Son. So I don't want to go into the, listen, I am not a Christian theologian, so I can't tell you that for sure. But it definitely sounds like they're considering it as separate entities in a way, even though altogether they are one in some strange, you know, 345 CE type of way. Yeah, what's going on?
Believing in God, one of the seven mitzvahs?
Yeah, 100%. Remember, the big, Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach are the big three, and then Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. So Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichus Damim. And then Aver Min HaChai is the Aleph. Birchas Hashem, you can't curse out God. That's a euphemism. Gezel, and then Din. So those seven are the, without a question, believing in God is within there. They have to believe in God. So it's strange. The Ramah in Orach Chaim Kuf Nun Vav, as well as Tosfos, in the beginning of Bechoros, in the bottom of Beis Min Aleph, and in Sanhedrin Samach Gimel, all say that Shituf is mutter by non-Jews. However, many, many people say that that Ramah and the Tosfos were censored because Christians were reading the Talmud and they were burning things because of it. So it seems like there were censors involved. And if you look at that Tosas on Bechoros, it is clear the Tosas doesn't make any sense. The whole there's something missing. There's something totally wrong with the way to read Tosas. You can look at it yourself. There's something totally wrong with it. The Ramah, I don't know. The Ramah seems to be legit, but it seems out there. The Me'il Tzedakah brings down, Shal Shu's Me'il Tzedakah brings down an Olas Tamid. Non-Jews can believe that one is higher than the other, but they can't say that they're equal to one another. The Me'il Tzedakah himself says, I don't know what you're talking about. If they can believe in one, they can believe in the other. They can't believe in one, they can't believe in the other. This is a huge machlokas, and I'm not going into any answers here, but this is a very, very big machlokas that one has to think about. Is shittuv allowed? And halakhically speaking, you are not allowed to go into a church. That means we're asering shittuv. Shittuv is aser by non-Jews. Because if you can't go into a church sanctuary, right, you might be able to go into the ante rooms for like an AA meeting or whatever. Don't be in AA meetings, but unless you're leading them. But if you have to, for whatever reason, then you could go in there. But you can't go into the actual church. Why? Because at best, it's shittuv. And shittuv is usher by goyim. So even though there's the Ramah, and even though there's Tosfos, we don't paskin that way. We paskin that shittuv is usher. And it's true across the board in Christianity. Across the board, it's going to be usher. No matter what form of Christianity they're believing in, it's there. People try telling me, Seventh-day Evangelists, Adventists, and other types. I don't know. I don't know the difference between them. But we paskin lahalacha, there's no difference between them. Unless there's somebody else that knows something different when it comes to it. We hold across the board, it's not going to be that way, and that's the way. You want to talk to me about mosques, maybe that's a little bit different. That might be a different issue altogether, whether Islam is considered a shittuf in some way, shape, or form because they make a physical representation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in some way. I don't know. That might be a different issue altogether. Regardless, we're going to skip the Sforno and the Meshech Chachma that's on your sheets over here, but let's go into the last thing from the Chassam Sofer and Taurus Moshe, who says something that's so amazing, you're going to pop out of your seats and you're going to dance a jig in front of this table, and somebody's going to get mad because it's going to get video. Copernicus, we all know, he believed that the earth rotated, right, and that it wasn't the earth, everything revolving around the earth, that the sun and the stars was all revolving around the earth. Copernicus wanted to prove that the earth rotates around the sun, and that there was, it's gravity before gravity, and that we were revolving around the sun and rotating on our axis rather than the opposite, vice versa, right? Until that point, Aristotelian theory was geocentric theory, which means that the earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around it. And comes along Copernicus and said, absolutely not. Copernicus was burned by the church. I know I said burned literally, but pretty much figuratively. Everybody despised him. They threw him out of town. Copernicus was thrown down for his different beliefs. At the end, they asked him a question. They said, if the earth is really rotating, right? He asked them a bunch of questions, but they asked, if you jump, why don't you find yourself a couple inches away from where you started from? I mean, every time you jump, the earth should rotate, so you should go a couple, you should jump like that, like every single time. So why doesn't it happen? It sounds stupid, right? I don't think they were very smart back then. Chachamim were, but we hold like, Eurytus Adorus goes by us. I don't know by them, but definitely by us. And if they believe they all came from monkeys, then it would be Eurytus Adorus the other way around, right? Because that every time you go around, if they're not, right, if they're somehow, I understand. Okay, regardless, says, so how what? So the answer Copernicus gave, was the obvious answer, right? It's not just the earth rotating, it's the atmosphere rotating as well. So when you're jumping, the whole earth is moving with you, so you end up falling back into place. I mean, it's obvious. Or that the rotation is so slow that it can't counter when a person just jumps up like that. But in theory, if a person would jump 100 feet in the air, then he would come down in a different place. That's not true because the atmosphere moves with us. But regardless, Copernicus had the answer to that question. That's that. Says Chassam Sofer, of course they think that way. Of course they think that way. They're looking at themselves as part of cogs in a machine. And the machine is huge. You have a universe that is so huge. You're thinking of yourself as a tiny, tiny little speck in that universe. So yeah, you're just a part. So everything is revolving around something else. Something else is important, whatever it is. A Jew can never feel that way. A Jew has to believe in geocentric theory. You know what it means? I don't mean that the earth is stationary and that everything's revolving around us. I mean the whole world is based on what we do. And every mitzvah you do, every avera you do, you are causing things to happen in the world. The whole universe is because of you. Nothing exists if you don't exist. That's the way you do it. The concept of Bishvili Nivra Olam, that because of me the world exists, that's mamish. That's mamish. That's not just a joke. That's not something we tell our kids so that we can build up their self-esteem. It's mamish. We really do make the entire earth. When Copernicus said his line, and everybody agreed with him, they agreed, because that's the non-Jewish sensical way of thinking of things. Looking at the sun and the moon and the stars, seeing everything out there and being, oh man, I'm a nothing in this universe. I can't affect anything. We can, and we will. We're tzaddikim. We are muflayim out there. We can do anything. The whole world revolves around us. And when I say world, I mean the universe. Everything revolves around us. And that's the concept that Chazal wanted to bring across. When we say that everything revolves around us, when the Rambam says that there are the klipas of the onion, we are the ikker. We are the ikker, and everything else doesn't matter. Are there aliens out there? Are there? I don't care. They're the outside of the onion. It doesn't matter. They don't have the Torah. I have the Torah. So therefore, it doesn't matter if they exist or not. If an alien comes down to Earth, to me, it's like a person coming from China. Do I believe that China exists? I've never been there. I don't know. I mean, I know I get toys from there. The Stender was probably made there. But do I actually believe China exists? I don't know. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Why? Because the same way that an alien could exist, but he doesn't have Torah, there's a person in China who exists and doesn't have Torah. For me, that Bishvili Nivra Olam is so important. You don't realize your power. You don't realize what you have. When you fast on Tisha B'Av, you're making the world go further. They don't realize that. So of course they think the opposite way. Rabbi Bar Chana once saw an Arab merchant. And the Arab merchant said, do you want me to show you where the earth and the sky meet? Where the earth and the sky meet. Now that means, seemingly, the world is flat, right? And the earth and the sky, like, hit each other. Like if anybody's read C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, you know what I'm talking about, with Prince Caspian? My son has read it. Nobody else has read it? Yeah? Okay. Christian motif. You shouldn't read it. Regardless, you know what I'm talking about also. Yeah, horrible. So either way, regardless, right, the concept that he says where the sky and the earth meet, where it's going right there. So Rabbi Bar Chana went with the Arab merchant. He saw where the sky and the earth met, right? And he saw it right there. And he took off his cap. I forgot what else he did. Took off his cap and his staff and his cloak. He took his staff and his cloak and he put it up there, right? And he went to go daven. And when he came back, it was gone. And he said, there are thieves here. There are thieves. Who's stealing things at the end of the earth? And the Arab merchant said, it's Galgala Chozer Ba'olam. This is the way it goes. Tomorrow, at the same time, you'll see it'll come back. And the next day he went there, and he found his staff and his cloak again. He was able to take it all back. What in the world does that mean? What's going on here? Now, I'm not saying that there isn't into the earth. I don't know. Maybe the world does work that way and that everything is, it is flat. That would be awesome. If at the end of 120 we go up to Shemayim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like, it was flat. It was a pretty good mess up on my part. Everybody thought the other way. I'm not saying it, but it seems that this is it. The Arab merchant is Eliyahu HaNavi. The Arab merchant was Eliyahu HaNavi. This whole message was the following. He wanted to show him how the entire world is created for a tzaddik. If you're a tzaddik, you will be where the heaven and the earth meet. You are the person who is able to move the heavens. You can make everything run. You can be that tzaddik he was trying to tell Rabbi Bar Chana. And Rabbi Bar Chana said, I'm in. I'm in. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be that tzaddik that the whole world runs through me. I'm going to be the tzaddik that makes the gal go. And he took off his cloak and his cane, his staff. He put it up there and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to sit and daven and learn all day long. I'm not going to do anything for Parnassa. I'm going to put it all on you and you'll give me everything I need. And he did it. He sat and he davened and he learned all day long. Guess what happened? He became seriously poor. He got no money. And he said to Eliyahu HaNavi, you're a ganav. You told me that if I sacrifice myself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything will be okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the world for a tzaddik. I'm a tzaddik, and I'm not getting anything. And Eliyahu HaNavi told him, Gagal HaKos Ba'olam. We have this as a Gemara. Har be'asu ki Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Many people try doing like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to learn all day and to daven all day. How'd that work out? Lo also be'adam. It doesn't work. Very few people are zoche to be able to be like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Galgal HaKos Ba'olam. Certain people are under that galgal. Certain people are not. Certain people aren't. You, my friend, Rabbi Bar Chana, are not. And therefore, he waited and he took it back. Meaning he went back into his parnasa. He still learned, but he still did a parnasa on the side as well to be able to make sure that he had everything down. It's a brilliant shot. Because we have to know that the whole world is running based on us. But that still means we have to take care of ourselves with our ishtadlus. What that ishtadlus is, okay, everybody's different. Everybody has a different form of ishtadlus and what they have to do and how they have to go about in this world. But the ikr is the ruchnis. The ikr is doing what you're supposed to do. To be able to sit there and say, I don't mean to say it this way. But for a person to tell me, I can't fast on Tisha B'Av because I have to go to work. Something messed up there. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not telling you that this is every person is totally different in that. But there's something there. You don't realize what your fasting is doing. You don't realize how powerful your fast is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What you can cause to happen through your fasting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You don't realize it. And when a person doesn't realize that, this is the result. The result is you ask a kasha that to me does not seem to be the right kasha to ask. To me does not seem like it's the right thing to ask. Sit in bed the entire time. I actually did tell somebody who asked me the question, and I said, if you can sit in bed the whole time and get a babysitter for your kids, that's the best thing. You know what happened? The babysitter took the kids and fed the kids treif hot dogs at a mall. She said, does my schus of fasting go away if I kill my babysitter? I said, is she Jewish? Obviously. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Regardless, that's the idea. Guys, what we spoke about tonight was, simply put, we went through Rashi, and then we went into these concepts between the Ramban and the Rambam, trying to understand what it's like to actually dive into these stars, etc., trying to understand all this. Have a good Shabbos, everyone.